Album club.
All right, this meeting's being recorded. And I thought a good place to start would be just to tell a quick story about the most ridiculous coincidence, small world kind of thing that happened. So as I was telling you guys, I'm on my surgery rotation. So I'm just basically like observing surgeries, following the residents, stuff like that. And I'm doing this amputation with this doctor who has the same last name as one of our friends. And it's a pretty distinctive last name. So I had to, I was just, hey, by the way, you know, I've got a friend with the same last name as you. He's a pretty serious doctor. First thing he says, is he from Jordan? I'm like, yes, he is Jordanian. He's like, huh, no way. I'm like, yeah. And you know, my friend, he's not in Philadelphia. He's in Dubai. And he's like, oh, I have family in Dubai. And so I'm like, that's crazy. Do you know, I said his name. He's like, no. I'm like, dad's name is so-and-so, you know, sister's name, mother's name, whatever. He gets on his phone, makes a quick text, gets a reply. Oh yeah, yeah, we're cousins. She's like, are you serious?
Well, the weirdest thing I thought about that story is he had to confirm it with a text.
So because they're different branches of the family. They're different branches of the family. So he was born and raised in the U.S., whereas our friend has never even been to the U.S. So I think that.
Yeah, he sounds American.
So their dads are first cousins, I think, is the way it worked. And so then basically, I texted our friend. I was just like, hey, I just assisted your cousin in cutting someone's leg off. And that was true. Cutting off people's legs is not as high tech as I would have thought. It's actually kind of just what you think. You just start cutting. If you see a blood vessel, you just tie it off. And that's pretty much it.
When you say tie off a blood vessel,
is it like a water balloon?
Well, just
wrap it around your finger.
No. Like you just use stitches.
I didn't
stitch that. I just you have to close up. So I did like surface like skin.
That's good. You didn't stitch because they only happen to snitches.
That's true.
You have to like cauterize the wound or something. How do you do that? Do you just wrap it?
Yeah, both. Like as you're going.
Well, what do you cauterize? Use, like mini blowtorch or something? Or
no, it's like this this little electric pen, and the patient is sitting on like a conductive like surface, and so like basically like electricity goes from the little tiny pen tip through the patient, and then so it kind of just burns whatever it touches. But anyway, cool. That's what I've been doing for the past month, and I have been listening to these two albums. Shags, sorry, not the Shags, that was last week. No, sorry, the Shags. Skeggs. The Shags and the Skeggs, too similar, and San Cisco. Yeah. So we have a troll amongst us, Matt. So I thought, why don't we save that conversation for the middle? Because that's just so different.
Yeah, go for it. All right. You know.
So let's start with either Don Henley or San Cisco.
Lead on, mate. Lead on, whichever you fancy.
All right, let's go San Cisco. So Johnny suggested the album Between You and Me by San Cisco. And Johnny, why don't you tell us about it, why you chose it, stuff like that.
It's just a band I got into a lot in lockdown with their, they had an EP out at the start of lockdown, four tracks, most of which made it onto the album. I think the album was actually brought forward quite a bit because of the pandemic, and a lot of the songs had been worked on and recorded before the lockdown, but it gave them the opportunity to really like knuckle down and get it mastered a lot sooner than they anticipated. And it came as we were having a bit of a late summer. I think it came out at the start of September, so restrictions were getting eased and stuff, and we were going out seeing people a lot more, sitting out in the garden, and it was a great album for that. So I ended up listening to it loads and just really, really enjoyed it. And it just felt like, since quite majority of it is like disco inspired pop, it just felt really right for the time, and yeah, it's worked out well.
Which songs from it do you like the most?
Reasons is probably my favorite from it. That's just a tune.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was on the EP as well, and it was just just a great catchy tune. They're quite good at what they do in terms of like keeping it reasonably simple without it being too like cheesy pop or something. You can definitely tell that it's like indie pop, where they want to make make that sound themselves using whether it's just drums, guitar, bass, or with a synthesizer as well.
You know what's funny about that song is I'm surprised they didn't call it Let It Go, just because how many times it repeats that in the chorus. You know how, like, with AC/DC, the chorus of their songs almost just always repeats the title over and over?
Yeah.
That's almost what this song does. I'm like, why would you not call it Let It Go? I mean, probably because it's a Frozen song, right?
Yeah. But also, yeah, the lyrical content is about the reasons, isn't it? So it's what the overall song is about.
Yeah, that song was actually also one of my favorites. I like the guy's voice on it a lot. And it's got this really kind of, like you said, Johnny, it's upbeat, catchy, but that song wasn't too cheesy. I thought some of the other ones were, but that one I liked a lot.
Yeah, it was kind of, to me, like barbecue music. That's what it made me think.
That's what I was listening to. Like, it was great when we were sat out in the garden chilling or getting a few drinks.
I really liked the song On the Line, but only because it reminded me of the Pulp song Disco 2000.
And
it makes me think of Deborah. And I even had got my mum in on that. So I was like, what does this sound like? And then I just went, Deborah. And Pulp. It just made me kind of, and Pulp's got that kind of similar feel in a weird way. They're quite a summery band in my head, and I don't know why. Because not the music isn't always summery.
No, I see what you mean now, yeah. You say you want things to change, but they just stay the same, yeah. It's not in your head, there's something in the air. And when we disconnect, I still feel you there.
For that song, Matt, On the Line, I like the interplay on that song between the lead singer and then the girl. Their voices mix.
Drummer as well.
Yeah. Their voices mix very well. Thing is, I don't think she's as gifted a natural singer like the guy is, but I think they know that, and their voices kind of interplay really well. I think that's the way that they use her voice. It's they know, like, you know, we've got, like, you know, a really talented frontman. But at the same time, so we're going to just kind of, like, I guess, accentuate the lines with her. And yeah, so I kind of like the call and response they do sometimes, and how in that song they traded verses. And so you kind of get, like, the same verse, but presented differently. Keeps the song fresh.
Yeah, they I saw an interview where they kind of explained where that comes from a lot, where he'll mostly write the song, like, lyrically, and the guitarist will do a lot of the musical work. And then Scarlett's like the overall song manufacturer sort of thing, where she thinks, oh, this needs to be changed, or this, like, I can sing this bit, or you sing this bit, not me, etc. And then makes it more of a, like, rounded song. So it's quite good how they work that out as a band, where it keeps it fully between themselves and not having to get, like, producers in to change things up. They try and keep it in-house as much as they can.
I saw a couple of their live performances. She's actually, like, I actually really like her drumming style. It's very, like, very tight.
She got talked to drum by her dad is a music manager. I think it was the drummer from the John Butler Trio. Yeah, I think it's that band. Yeah,
I think you've shown me this band before, John. I think you mentioned something similar, so I think you're probably right.
Yeah, they've been going a long time. They started out in high school. They're about our age, so they've been going 10, 11 years. Their first album came out, I think, when they're in like towards the end of school days. So yeah.
Wow.
So chances are I'm showing you something from them.
Yeah, I think you should when I lived at yours.
How did you find out about them, Johnny?
They've just been famous for quite a while in Australia. So
many of the things that we've done, I've noticed, are Australia and New Zealand, right? Because yeah. Wild Orange, Skeggs, now this. And then also Gang of Youths.
Yeah.
The Gang of Youths are technically British-based now. They live in London.
Are they?
Yeah.
Londoners.
And only one of them is actually Australian. They're all from different places. Like one's American, one's British.
So there we go, Zach. Thanks a lot, mate.
Yeah, I think that's just because over there it's a more open music scene that isn't dominated by the mainstream chart stuff that the American market and the UK market is. So you've got bands like that aren't like mainstream music get more exposure, and so they're more likely to be heard or like booked for festivals around the world, and they get picked up by other communities.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe just how far away it is. They have their own community, their own scene more.
Well, what songs?
What songs did you like in this?
I liked quite a few. Reasons I really liked On the Line, but only because On the Line is the one I played over and over again. Only sing Deborah. Flaws I liked, and Tell Me When You Leave Tonight. I thought it was all right. I thought some were quite forgettable, actually. I'd be like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a good album.
That was what I thought. I thought a lot of the songs in the middle of the album, kind of starting from Shine up to Flaws, were a bit forgettable.
One of my favorites, what did you think of When I Dream? I think that's track 7.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that I thought was... just kind of got lost in the album a bit, to be honest. But looking at it now, I can see that one has 10 million listens.
Yeah, so that one actually was... it was released in like 2018 as just a random non-album single. And so when I heard it on the album, I was like, this song is dead familiar. I couldn't put my finger on it for ages, and then realized that, yeah, it was because I had it in my library from 2 years ago. And so I wasn't exposed to it before.
Matt, yeah, you're saying you liked Flaws. That was probably my favorite song on the album.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Because it's like a very heartfelt ballad, but it toes the line between too cheesy and good atmosphere. And so I remember listening to that when I was on the subway, and then I was like, all right, I like this song. I like the tone it's going for. And the guy's voice is really good. The more that I listened to the album, the more I liked his voice. It's a very dreamy song.
They did a live acoustic thing of the full album on one of those like stream shows that were big during the pandemic. When it was all stripped back, I couldn't believe how good his voice sounded on it.
Yep, I think I saw the same performance as you, and I thought the same thing, that he sings great live as well.
Shout. Mm.
You know, he's a talented fella.
Yeah, and he's quite good at writing like little melodies that create a little bit of like catchiness in the song. Than even in like their slower ones.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that I sought out when I would put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd
adds a good bit of weight to the album as well, so it's not all just like dancey disco pop inspired songs as well. It gives a bit more like depth to it. So overall, I think the album is about a breakup.
Yeah,
it gives that darker feel, and then you've got the light feel with the lighter songs as well.
Do you know what I like about this album? I was thinking is that it doesn't try to do too much. It kind of like, it just does what's right. It doesn't try to be the best album in the world or like, and because I feel like if you do that a lot of the times, you can just come across as just trying too hard. They just enjoy the music they're playing and just go where it takes them. I respect that.
Yeah, I think with them being friends from high school as well, that's kind of reflecting the music a bit like how you mentioned with Mild Orange, how you can tell their music comes from them just jamming and having a good time. Like it's a different variation of that. They enjoy making music together, like making these albums, going out and touring them together, and you can hear it in the music.
Do you know, for some reason, it's funny, I don't know why I wrote this down, because I can't see it anymore, but one of my first impressions was that this album reminds me of Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, you know, the latest Arctic Monkeys album.
Mm.
I don't know why I wrote that down, because listening back, I don't hear that anymore.
It has a I know you guys are saying it's like it's got a natural feel to it. Okay, it's an organic kind of album.
Yeah, the way you described it there as well, Zach, is pretty much verbatim how I've described it to someone in the past. Is that you kind of know what you're going to get. It's not trying to be too much. It is what it is, and they're proud of that.
I guess final thoughts. So I said my favorite songs are Flaws, Reasons, just a lot of fun. I think they front loaded it well. So I like the opener, Skin. I like On the Line. I like Messages. And then one of the songs after Flaws, I can't remember if it's Tell Me When You Leave Tonight or Between You and Me. I think it has some really cool chords in it. Cool chord progression. But as Matt was saying, it's funny he said that, because I that was my main criticism of the album, is that the three or four songs in the middle I think are a bit weaker.
Yeah.
So it starts well and ends well. That's San Cisco for you. And then why don't we move on to so Matt, when you were describing what we're gonna listen to next, and you said that this was Kurt Cobain's he rated them as very influential. I thought I might have an idea about what you're talking about, because I'd heard about this group before, but I wasn't confident enough to say anything. But then as soon as I put it on, I'm like, yep, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason that I'd heard of them is that it was like someone posing the question, can music be bad? Is there such a thing as bad music?
Yeah, I've seen there's a lecture on that.
Yeah, Matt, tell us about this album.
Well, it's shit, isn't it? It's not good, but that's what makes it good. So it's just this chaotic, well, amateur, it isn't fair. They are, but they're more than that. They're unenthusiastic, hate to be there musicians who aren't good making an album. And I think that is one of the most unique sounds. And I enjoy that. Not enjoy it. I don't enjoy listening to the music, but I just enjoy a lack of enthusiasm. In life, I enjoy lack of enthusiasm. If someone's doing something but not quite happy about it, but they're doing it anyway, I think fair play to them. That they're doing it despite not wanting to do it. It takes a bit of character. And that's what these people did. In fact, they were forced to do it because their grandmother had a palm reading or tarot card reading. and they said that her son would be the father of a great rock band. So he took the kids out of school and said, "There you go, you're ready."
Well, you know what's funny is that that kind of came true because they did become famous. So that palm reader was probably like, "Hey, told you. I didn't say you'd be good." Well, because didn't they say they'd be renowned or something like that? I think they'd be famous. Yeah.
Well, they're infamous, I'd say. Well,
the infamous is the word for sure.
But I admire them for that.
If you watch them now, they've had a couple of performances. They can play the song surprisingly accurately, which makes me think that they're actually now good musicians because they were like young when they were doing this, right? If you hit record,
they took them out of school.
Yeah, if you hit record on, you know, the first things that I did or anyone did, it would sound as bad, but it would sound terrible. You know, maybe they've grown a lot since then.
Well, no, they all hated music, I think. According to some of the interviews, it's like, to me, it's the room of music.
That's so funny you said that, because that's exactly the way I've described it to people, is that if you've seen The Room, it is the equivalent of that in music.
Yeah. It's this fantastically bad bit of that type of entertainment. And it's brilliant. And it's unique. And it's oddly admirable. And at the same time, there's quite of a sad story behind it. They were forced into this. I've seen an interview with the guy who originally recorded it. He said, like, he turned up. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to record this rock band." And these girls turned up looking slightly miserable, carrying in the equipment, and he just thought they were roadies. And then they started playing. And he was like, "What the fuck?" But yeah, brilliant.
Didn't they as well hear it back and were just devastated or something as well, is what I heard, is that they in their heads thought they were good until they heard it.
Oh, I've heard they didn't like it. Well, one thing that strikes me is, why are their guitars actually?
They're so out of tune. Yeah, I was wondering the same thing.
Who didn't bother to say? Who's got it to the point where they're releasing this LP? They've gone, "Do you want a tuner? Like, do you guys not have one?" Which, again, is incredible. I can't believe they thought they were good.
Would it have been recorded all as a band collectively rather than individual audio tracks? Because they sound out of time for a lot of it as well, which...
Yeah, it was recorded as a group. Quickly. They all just got into a group. I'm sure the guy at the recording artist was like, "I'm just going to..."
But say what you will, but the songs are pretty rehearsed. Like, they don't make too many mistakes. They know the lyrics. They know what's coming next. They have put work into it. What's funny is how there's two singers, right? They're like relatively in sync. Like they know what's happening, but the drummer seems to just lay down whatever beat she wants.
Yeah.
And then so like you have like one person doing their own thing and then two people doing something else. And it's funny because some of the songs end pretty like on a pretty like synchronized way. They're like, dun, dun, dun. And the next song starts and it's just like back to like total noise. And you're like, "Oh, here we go again."
Just carnage. A lot of the songs are just pure carnage.
I love
it. Don't know what's going to happen.
I would sometimes just be sat, say, even in my office, and I might try to listen to it. Sometimes I just couldn't. Sometimes it was too much. I would just start laughing about this idea that you two, because you got making notes and stuff, you two were sat listening to this album, making notes.
No, I didn't make any notes in it. I couldn't.
No,
oh, that's not good.
This song sucks.
No, I didn't make
who does this compare it. To? You too. It just that cracked me up for so long.
The lyrics in Philosophy of the World are great. I love when they're talking about how all the girls with long hair want short hair and all the girls with short hair want long hair.
Oh,
it's kind of
come up with this stuff.
The song that made me most be like, okay, like, what is going on? Was My Pal Foot Foot. And I think other people have the same thought, because just when I went on YouTube, and like, yeah, that was one of the ones that shows up more.
Yeah.
That's Do you know what that means? What is Foot Foot? Is that their dog or something?
No, I don't think anyone knows.
Yeah, I thought it was like an animal or like an imaginary friend or something, like something like chat. With a childlike name.
I just thought it was nonsense. Not only failed music, but they clearly failed English lessons. This is, what is this? As in like English literature. They could obviously speak the language.
My pal's name is Football, he always likes to roam. My pal's name is Football, I never find him home. I go to his house, knock at his door.
It's interesting how they have put effort in, right? It's not just like, I don't know,
it's like an abusive thing.
Yeah, but like, you know, they've written songs. They're not just like making up as they go. The Who Are Parents one is kind of, you know what? That was actually in my head recently. Yeah, I was like, who are parents? for some reason it was in there.
Well, here are the lyrics, though. So, my pal's name is Footfoot. He likes to roam. My pal's name is Footfoot. I never find him home. I go to his house, knock on the door. People come out and say, Footfoot don't live here no more. Yeah, maybe it is an imaginary friend, Johnny. Or just
I think it's an imaginary friend, and they're getting of the age where they're not around anymore. They're maturing. Maybe their deep lyrical genius is just with the worst output ever.
Like, this album's not unknown anymore. It's like basically the room of music. It's found a second life of just what weird things can happen if you have no prior experience.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what else you can find that's anything like this.
I don't think you could try to make anything like this. I don't think this is a one, you know, a dime a dozen. This, not that means it's common.
Well,
it's bizarre.
That was when Kurt Cobain said it's influential. How exactly is this influential on Nirvana?
Oh, that was just Kurt Cobain trying to be Kurt Cobain, wasn't it? That was him being almost like a caricature.
I think it's something with the grunge music, where because grunge started out so heavily distorted and stuff, and that he thought people would like find it as terrible as this stuff and like off-putting. I think it's probably got to do with that.
Yeah, that about sums up my thoughts on this. It was fun to listen to, but I don't think I'll be revisiting it anytime soon.
I think we're all glad we've heard it.
You know what? I actually am, because it's like, I don't know, it's a fun thing. I'm glad I've seen The Room as well.
It's one of those things, you know, you've got to do it. And what do you think? Do you think it was bad? Do you agree with the philosophical question? Can music be bad?
Yeah, I thought it was a bloody train wreck.
Like, the only way I think music could be bad is if you don't do what you intended to do. So I guess maybe by that measure, they probably didn't want to make it sound like this. But no, I don't really think that, like, your intention can be bad if it's just art. You can do whatever you want.
My intentions were good. I wish it would. Abracadabra.
Johnny, did you still want to take a break, put something in the air fryer?
Yeah, oh, we finished with that album now, are we?
Yep, yep.
What, are you air frying?
I might just do some wedges.
Have you tried it? Have you tried an air fryer, Zach?
No, I haven't. But it's all the rage.
They're getting shit.
Yeah, they are. Well, I was happily impressed.
Yeah, during the pandemic, I bet like the sales of air fryers shot up 1,000,000%.
Well, I've been meaning to get one for ages, and then I got a really good deal on Prime Day last year, so I thought, yeah, let's go for it.
My toaster oven has a convection oven setting, which I've heard is the exact same thing. I just haven't used it.
What's convection? Just like fan oven, fan-assisted oven.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, that's effectively what an air fryer is. But
yeah.
Fan oven. What else have you eaten?
I don't know.
Have you had any bread recently, Johnny?
I did. I had bread and soup for lunch.
What kind of soup?
Heinz tomato, cream of tomato with a hint of chili.
I've not had that Heinz hint of chili before.
It's nice, yeah. It's just got a slight kick.
You see, I don't think you should mess with cream of tomato soup.
Cream of tomato now seems a bit dull. It's like missing that little...
You see, it's to me, you're overcomplicating something which is, you know, it's taken hundreds of years to get this point where we've got cream of tomato soup.
One of the things I saw on Reddit that I want to try, I just haven't had the guts to do it, is someone's like, what food alteration do you do that's different? And someone's like, I put a shot of Tabasco in my coffee. Kind of want to try that.
That sounds horrible.
Well, because chili and chocolate go really well together. Chili and coffee.
I disagree. I don't think chili and chocolate is good.
Oh. What about chocolate and orange?
Do you like pineapple?
Chocolate and orange.
Chocolate and any fruit is the best.
Yeah.
Do you like pineapple on your pizza?
What did you say on a pizza?
Pineapple?
No. What are you doing?
Love it.
Did you put a strawberry on a pizza?
I don't know. I don't know if I put a strawberry on. I'd try it, but...
Put apple on your pizza.
I feel like fruit's all the same. Any fruit is just as good as any other fruit for whatever you want. Actually, I'm interested to hear what you guys thought about Inside Job. Just a preface, I guess. This is like one of the albums I'm like least able to objectively look at because this might be like the first album I've ever listened to. So it came out in 2000. I remember when it came out, I guess, listening to it. So I would have been like 7 at the time. And I felt like at all these different points in my life, I've been listening to it. I remember listening to like My Thanksgiving, the last song in year 5, and like Miss Ghost later on in like year 10, 11. And then just year 6, I remember it's probably not even a very good album, to be honest. Like, it didn't get very good reviews, I don't think. And there are songs on it that I skip. Like there are songs on it I don't even like. But the ones I do like, I like a lot, and I've heard them a million times. So yeah, tell me what you guys thought.
I felt it was like it sounded like an aging rock star. It made me close my eyes and just see a middle-aged man trying, which isn't good.
So it definitely has a bit of that adult contemporary rock radio sound on a few of the songs.
It just sounded like generic.
I think so.
It was formulaic almost. He'd left the Eagles brilliant, even though I compare him to like Billy Joel. Right? Billy Joel has a lot of amazing songs, but a lot of average songs. I tried to play Billy Joel in the car with Claire, and we skipped loads of them because they're just not that good. And that's what I felt with this.
Johnny, how about you?
Sorry.
And one thing I didn't like about the album was it was so fucking long, and it didn't need to be, in my opinion. It was a long-ass album, and it was just tough to listen to as a body of work in that aspect. Yeah. Although some of the songs were right, and then some were a bit cheesy, just like trying to cling to like what we know is like classic rock now. But obviously in the 2000s, it was like on its way out. I like the songs where he went a bit more blues rock. I thought those were more... There's like more variation with those. It was a bit more exciting and not quite what I expected from the album. So I did enjoy those. Some of the ballads were okay, but then some I thought were quite cheesy and a bit lame.
Yeah,
some of the older stuff, it did remind me a lot of the Eagles in a way, which I think more so probably the ones that I liked rather than the ones I didn't like, which I probably felt were still clinging on to past glories.
The songs on it that I don't like and skip are For My Wedding, which is a cover actually, Goodbye to a River, and Annabelle. Those three I never listened to. But pretty much every other one, I actually do like it. So I'd be interested to know like which ones. For example, I was just kind of listening to a bit recently, and you know the song that really stood out to me as being like really having funny, cynical lyrics. Work in it. It's just kind of like a takedown on like consumerism and capitalism from a late 90s, 2000s standpoint, talking about like CDs and like things like that.
I found that cheesy. I felt like that was a middle-aged man being like, what can I write about now to be relevant? I'll write about this. So you sit down and you try to write about something. And that's what came across.
There's not too many songs that do that. Like when he talks about like corporation, nation states and stuff like that. And just like where the loudest live to trample on the least, the largest, sorry. But that was kind of funny. Matt's not a fan.
No. I liked the genie, but it made me think of, for some reason, it made me think of GTA Vice City, but this album came out in 2000 and that's set in the 80s, which kind of,
because it's clinging onto that classic rock, like I said, some of the songs would have fit in around that era.
How about Miss Ghost? I thought you would have liked Miss Ghost because that one's like a very atmospheric blues song. And that one's actually probably my favorite on the album.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good blues kind of thing, but it didn't thrill me. It wasn't like something that stood out to me.
Yeah, lyrically, the singing part of that song, I wasn't that asked about, but some of the guitar work I thought was really good on that.
Yeah.
Don Henley's not known for his lyrics at all.
Hotel California.
I mean,
are you right there?
Yeah. Actually, Don Felder, the old guitar player who they fired over like this big contractual dispute, he wrote the music. So Don Henley wrote all the melody and the lyrics. But honestly, I don't think the lyrics of Hotel California they're pretty meaningless. And then everyone always tries to attribute meaning, but they're like, no, we just wrote about like, I think that they're saying it's like an episode of a Twilight Zone where like all the setting just keeps changing. I don't think it's that deep. But no, I was saying Miss Ghost is probably my favorite song. Like often when there's like a dark, creepy night, I'll put that song on and it just sets the mood. And then something I really liked about it is in one of the final choruses, there's like these background like that. And then just right towards the end, to turn up the intensity a bit more, they switch from ooh to ah. And I remember hearing that as a kid being like, that's really cool. And then so I actually, when I did that little EP of I recorded, I did that because of that song. So at one point,
that was pretty good.
Yeah, at one point this girl was singing, I'm like, okay, background vocals, I want you to go ooh here. And then on this bar, I want you to switch from ooh to ah. And then, and that's where I heard that.
And I'm not pulled from the dream day.
Did you catch, Matt, I know you like talking about this kind of stuff sometimes, the song They're Not Here, They're Not Coming? Did you guys catch what that was about?
No.
I might get the lyrics up now and see if I can decipher.
Aliens.
Yeah, that was the one about UFOs, which is a weird topic for a song.
They're actually talking about, that's really strange. They were talking about today on the radio, on Absolute Radio, Music Matters, Absolute Radio FM. They were talking about songs that reference UFOs or aliens.
It's because the US are releasing UFO data at the end of the month.
It's also International UFO Day.
Oh, is it?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they probably timed in that release with the National UFO Day.
There's a documentary about UFOs I really want to watch. And I've rented it on Amazon Prime, so I've got 30 days. And it's supposed to be just an actual, really analytical look at all the evidence that there is UFOs. Like, it's not trying to say...
UFOs exist, that's the thing. It's just whether they're alien or not.
Yeah, well, that's the angle. They're looking at it and saying, are these aliens? Here's the evidence. Here's the evidence that it's not. Make up your mind.
What kind of annoys me is that when all these new videos that have been coming out, I saw like one or two people on YouTube who are skeptics, and they like explained why like very believable camera effects that they actually like reproduce. So like, look, if your camera's on a moving platform and then the camera rotates, this effect will happen. And then they reproduce it. And then they're like, look, even in this image, if you don't look at the UFO, everything in the background is subject to the same effect. So basically they're kind of like giving plausible explanations as opposed to like aliens coming. But what annoys me is that all like the scientists, all the pop scientists, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, they just be like, yeah, why would they come here? It's like, I don't know. Like, who? It's like the worst argument against it in the world. Like either say something interesting or don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
And also, like, I like the idea of those people that think it's a big cover-up by the governments. It's like, I think one of the first things, if like aliens were real risk, they'd be like, yo, Kim, Putin, we've got a bigger thing to worry about rather than our shitty politics. Like, we could be invaded any day.
I would love if aliens were real. Yeah, obviously, like, a grainy video is not going to convince me of that.
Yeah. I think it would end quite a few issues, actually.
Do you think it would, though? Because people always say, like, when they go to space, oh, you see how we're all one. But, like, do you?
Yeah, I think it would end a lot of political issues, but it wouldn't stop other stuff because you'd get half the fuckwits out there. Wouldn't believe a government conspiracy or something. If the government's united to fight aliens, they'd think it was a new world order.
I've got a book, 51 Things You Should Know, that kind of book. Mm-hmm. And it's like articles from like certain newspapers that you might have missed. And one of them is Who Owns What in Space? America have passed quite a controversial law, which means that private companies can go to meteorites and other places legally in America and claim them and own them. But that means that company being registered in America, they then technically become part of America because that company is subject to American law because it's an American company. So Russia are now arguing against that in the UN, saying that that is America trying to claim space.
Does that mean that a baby born on like an asteroid claimed by USA would be an American?
If it's one of the asteroids owned by that private company X, let's say, that have landed their own thing on that company and declared it theirs.
What's funny is that my understanding was that space is known is what's classified as like the common heritage of mankind, the same way that no one owns Antarctica. But if you look at Antarctica, everyone agrees that, like, no one owns it. But there actually are a bunch of claims by different countries to different regions.
Yeah, it's all divided up, isn't it?
Yeah, so officially it's not. But countries do have claims of slices of it. And when the companies build bases, they only build in their own slice. So, like, it's technically not owned by anyone. But I think, like, the countries are just kind of forcing the issue. But no, aliens, the song makes some points about, like, why would they come here just to get McNuggets, I think it says at one point. Which, again, that argument is like my least favorite for the existence of aliens.
Would they howl into the saucer, find Orlando's rat and hug it, go screaming through the universe just to get McNuggets? But I don't think so, I don't think so. It's much too dangerous, it's much too strange. Here in a world that won't give over.
I also don't like the zoo hypothesis, you know, where they're like, the reason we can't see aliens is because they're all observing us. Like, just because you can imagine it doesn't mean it's true.
To me,
Truman Show.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. You know, if a civilization was defined as, it's just such a hypothetical situation. It's kind of like the same when Europeans found America. What did they go for? They didn't go for potatoes. They brought potatoes.
People think that if we're contacted by aliens, we shouldn't reply, which I don't know.
I'd be like, hello.
Yeah, no, I would definitely say hi.
Imagine like being like the guy on the mic. Hello, aliens.
What if we're the aliens, though? What if there's life out there, but it's a lot more primitive than us?
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh, shit, what, they're aliens that are so more technology advanced than us, and that's us.
That wouldn't surprise me. If, like,
you know what we've got to do? We just probe them.
Yeah.
We've blown up their asshole.
Sci-fi.
What's it like up there? What's like, going on with their assholes? It'd just be the funniest thing to have to send a spaceship into space, but also, you know, take into account the measurements and all the equations for lube. So you've got to be like, you know, which is the lightest lube? I don't know. Which is the least dense lube? I've no idea. Is it water-based? Maybe.
What lasts the longest in space? Yeah. Did you guys know who is the guest star on the first song of this album? Nobody Else in the World But You?
No.
I didn't know.
I never knew. And then just recently, I think I read about it. I'm like, whoa, I had no idea. It's Stevie Wonder.
No way.
Because there's like a little keyboard synth solo in it, and there's like a little background voice. And so, yeah, apparently that's Stevie Wonder in there.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I think I would have liked it a lot more if it was shorter, if they trimmed some of the fat.
You know what's weird? Yeah. I was reading, so actually I just finished reading Don Felder's autobiography, the guy that was fired from the Eagles. Yeah, he rips into like Henley and Glenn Frey, especially Glenn Frey. Apparently, the Eagles basically had a contract to do like a comeback album, because when they released Hell Freezes Over, as in when they go back together, there were only, I think, four original, like, new songs. They were thinking of making a new album. And then one of the songs that Don Henley wanted to put on it was For My Wedding. Then that whole album fell through. And then so he used it for his solo album. And I'm like, why? That song is like not particularly interesting, to be honest. He was just so obsessed with this one song.
People can get like that, can't they? They think they've got, that's almost like an indication of an ego. They've got something that they think is amazing. They've done this. This is their thing. They've done this, and it must be brilliant.
It's like Pet Sounds almost drove Brian Wilson mental.
Mm.
The song "Damn It, Rose," I really like that one, even though that was really long, probably too long looking back. But it uses minor 9 chords, and I love minor 9 chords. Probably my favorite chords. one of your chords.
Yeah, me too.
So that's got a really cool sound to it. It's clearly about a suicide, so pretty heavy lyrically.
Yeah, I did like that one. I remember that one quite well.
Wish that you were here with us to watch this tide as it ebbs and flows. Damn it, Rose.
And then My Thanksgiving might be one of my favorites. That one's got a really good vocal performance, I think. What did you guys think of his voice? Surely at least you can agree that even if you didn't like the songs, he's a good singer, right?
Yeah, he's a good singer. No one doubts Don Henley's a good singer.
Anything else to add, Johnny?
Not particularly. When you mentioned My Thanksgiving there, it reminded me that that's one of the ones I did like, especially, like you said, good voice. Also, I thought the melody was pretty memorable.
In My Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
That one lyrically also, Matt, I can see is very much like old rock star aging, just like looking back on his life. But yeah. I don't know. That song doesn't strike me as cheesy, which is one of the reasons why I like it. For every moment of joy, every
there's a place, right, for aging rock stars to write music. There's a place for it. Personally, I think it did it the best that I can think of is Bowie. He kind of always managed to keep himself relevant while not being cringy, which is
Johnny
quite...
Cash as well, I'm sorry.
Johnny Cash is another
His American albums are amongst his best, and they're all written as an old fella.
Yeah, that's true. Johnny Cash, David Bowie. And to be amongst that, that's truly a hard space to be. I mean, like, it's like, who listens to the latest Rolling Stones? No one. What's his man? Your man Mick Jagger, I remember when I was at uni, did a song with Will.i.am, and I thought it was the worst thing I've ever seen. It was the most cringy stuff.
That was terrible.
Someone just needs to tell them to stop.
I kind of feel like the reason why people don't listen to, like, new music from legacy acts is they're not putting up music that's with the culture anymore, with the time. But if you listen to, like, whatever the stuff they put out, in my opinion, like, it's usually as good as all their old stuff. It's just, like, not relevant anymore. So if you're, like, a mega fan...
isn't what made the old stuff good that it was relevant?
That's what made it popular, but I don't think that's what made it good. I don't think there's a big correlation between, like, the most popular songs and the best songs. Like, people are like, oh, Stairway to Heaven.
No, I disagree.
Like, I feel like Stairway to Heaven is a perfectly good song, but, like, I would never be like, it's the best song in the world. Like, I don't think there is such a thing.
I disagree. I think if you released, say, The Times They Are A-Changing by Bob Dylan in a time when nothing was changing, then everyone would be like, what are you on about, Bob? I think there are certain songs that they capture a moment and they become attached to that moment in history and so stay popular through that. I disagree with that. Good music always... I disagree that the time that they're released doesn't pay a factor.
That is what I was saying, that those classic songs, if they were to come out now, they wouldn't be popular. Not because they're not good, but because what's popular and what's good are, like, not the same thing.
Oh,
Also, not to say popular music's bad, it's just that, like, popularity catches a moment, but, like, if you release a song now, like, if Stairway to Heaven had never come out and it came out now, no one would have heard of it. And you listen to it, be like, that's a good song, but, like, it's not the best song of all time. No one would think that. Should we announce our next albums? So we're now back to the classic and the new. So, Johnny, do you want to tell us what classic album we're going to be listening to?
One of my faves, Blondie with Parallel Lines.
Wow.
Parallel Lines by Blondie. I always thought Blondie was an 80s group, and that was why I suggested it. I was like, we haven't really done much 80s. But this album came out in, what, 78?
Yeah, they're still going as well. They're still doing stuff.
Didn't she take a long break?
Well, they stopped. They didn't do much in the 90s, 2000s, other than that Maria song, which was a belter. But they're touring again and released an album 2-3 years ago, I think.
Johnny once got kicked out of a club for stealing a picture of Blondie.
Really?
Well, you did as well, didn't you? Because was on your show.
I facilitated. I had to hold you up. I had to put you on my shoulders to get it from the string.
And do you remember when they was like, out,
why
said,
is he putting him on your shoulders and why is he playing with the string? And you had to put it up your shirt. And we were like,
I'm just crinkling away.
And you got out and you just pulled out your shirt. And I thought, well.
No, because they told me that I had to put it back. So I said, I'm not climbing back up there because it was on like clotheslines above the dance floor. So I said, they said, okay, just put it on the bar then. It was closing time anyway, so everyone was filing out. That's why we thought it was a good time to nick it.
If you've been caught stealing and they're like, put it back where you found it, you're like, oh, I'm not going to put it up there. Like, I'll give it, like, but can I put it down here?
It was a few nights that they're taking it down anyway, so basically I was just doing their job. But so I went over to the bar to put it down, and my friend Jill was at the bar. So I just said, Jill, see what I'm putting down here? Put it up your side. Yeah. And so I went out with the bouncer, and then sure enough, Joel came out and then pulled it out from under her dress, and yeah, still have it to this day.
So Johnny's willing to steal for this Debbie Harry, right?
That's her name, Debbie Harry.
That's the classic album, and then the new album, Sour by Olivia Rodriguez.
Olivia Rodriguez.
I've heard quite a lot about this. Someone I follow who posts about hockey, like a hockey pundit, has been talking about this a lot. And I trust his word when it comes to sports. So let's see when it comes to music. I did like the song Driver's License. It struck me as almost like a new Adele.
Just to shout in that it's Olivia Rodrigo, you racist.
Is that racist?
Well, you just assumed because it sounded a bit Spanish, it was Rodriguez. She's Olivia Rodrigo.
What is that?
So it's Rodrigo, okay.
You know what? She made music for High School Musical, the musical series on Disney Channel.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, she's an actress.
I'm guessing she was in it, yeah.
She was also on the Disney Channel series Bizarre Vark.
All right, well, that's what we're going to be listening to. And then so we'll see you guys after that.
What's your name again, Zach?
Olivia Rodrigo.
There you go.
All right, bye.